Hello, I'm Martin Kelly, senior editor of Friends Journal, and this month we're doing Quakers and the Political Process. And with me on the phone here from Memphis, Tennessee, is Ron McDonald. And Ron wrote an article, This Age of Insecurity. So thanks for coming on, Ron.
Thank you. Good to be here with you.
You wrote this a while ago, actually, before the current political process exploded as it has. What is different than this than what you would have seen? You expected?
Well, there has been a lot of stuff that's happened in the political process that, but I feel like it kind of bears out the ideas in the article that a lot of the posturing that's going on in the political process is partly in response to the insecurity that we're feeling as a country, and that it's a pseudo answer to a great extent. It kind of bears out some of the calmest candidates are the ones that I think would be the best leaders. I'm not making a political statement there. Mm-hmm. I'm a political endorsement, but the kind of lack of calm that goes with the reactionary stuff that's happening right now, so to me, bears out and points to a sense of insecurity that people have. I've been thinking lately how many times we use the words secure the peace, for instance, or mm-hmm. security guards. That just so much points to the insecurity that we have as a nation, which is surprising in many ways because we're so powerful. Mm-hmm. Why do we have such insecurity? And to a great extent, the article was written to try to answer that question of why be so insecure when we have so much security.
Sure. And in many ways, this is sort of the golden age, could be, of America. And in some ways that, there's no world war, there's no Great Depression, medical advances are so high. Mm-hmm. We are the indisputed military champion of the world for what that's worth. There's not any credible threats here to our country. So what is this insecurity? And it seems to be in this political arena right now even higher, of course, Trump being the one who's the loudest at the moment. What do you see this insecurity stemming from when we are in an age of, there's certainly problems, certainly things to be worried about, but an age where we are in many ways more secure than ever?
Well, there's a historical parallel to this. In 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. Okay. And ushered in a transition in world history that's being rivaled by what's been happening in history really since the beginning of the 20th century, and it's gone through this into this century. There is so much transition going on right now, and in periods of transition, anxiety is up to the roof. Mm-hmm. And I make the point in the essay that anxiety that just stays there, metastasizes into insecurity. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're in such a transitional age right now that people are clamoring for answers rather than being able to say, I will move on in spite of this. The attempt to come up with answers to anxiety questions often leads us into more anxiety because there are no answers to some of the fundamental anxieties of life. Mm-hmm. And the only way we can live with those anxieties is to have the courage to move into them and move beyond them, but acknowledging that they'll always be there.
Right. You talked about a little bit how the Quaker process and practice really can help that. We have that sort of quiet pause. What can friends do to sort of calm ourselves first and then also play a role maybe calming the nation and focusing on the more sort of important questions and answers that may not be born by fear, but by more hope and reality?
Well, I don't know that doing is the right answer to it because that's almost a power attempt. Give me more power to get over it. I think it's a being issue. How can we be anxious and still be self-actualizing, still be confident? And I think the way to do that is to try not to end anxiety as we know it. And that's partly because the nature of anxiety is more difficult to deal with than fear is. We oftentimes focus on what we're afraid of when we're basically angry. I mean, well, angry might be the right word.
Sometimes.
But when we're basically anxious, we try to turn it into fear because fear has an object to it. If I come at you with a knife, you know to try to stop that knife from
right.
stabbing. You know what to do. But if you're feeling anxiety, there's no object to it. You're looking around saying, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? And there's no object to the anxiety. The fear has no object. Mm-hmm. And that's more difficult to manage. It has to be found from a sense of being able to settle ourselves. I'll tell you a story that came to me. I deal with people that come in with anxiety problems all the time in my work as a pastoral counselor. One woman came in and told me about a panic attack she was having. And like most people, I asked, well, how do you get through the panic attacks and what helps you stop the panic? And she said, 911. That's what I said. What? And she said, yeah, Psalms 91:1.
Okay, that one.
And I wrote it down just because I thought it was such a nice deal, nice way to say it. I keep it in my little calendar here. But Psalms 91:1, one who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. And she uses that as a mantra to help her with anxiety. Mm-hmm. Much like some people use a mantra like, this too shall pass, this too shall pass. Mm-hmm. And when you begin to do that and you breathe properly, then anxiety attacks, panic attacks dissipate. And we don't normally live in a state of panic, but we do live in a state where anxiety is part of our lives. The anxiety of guilt, the anxiety of death, the anxiety of meaninglessness. And they're always there. And I think one of the things that I found is as you remember, I asked that I could rewrite one little section of the article before you published it. Mm-hmm. I was teaching a class, and it dawned on me that I thought there was a fourth kind of anxiety that Tillich didn't write about. And that's the anxiety of powerlessness or helplessness, mm-hmm. which I think might be the child's earliest anxiety. I can't do it. I'm not powerful enough. I'm helpless. I need your help. And those kind of anxieties are always with us. And it depends upon us finding something that calms ourselves. And it's not good. It's not really doing. It's being. Mm-hmm. And to add a little bit to that, there's a little joke. And when we laugh, we're rarely anxious, unless it's an anxious laugh. But most mm-hmm. of the time, when we really laugh, particularly a belly laugh,
right.
our anxiety goes away. The joke is that Camus said, to be is to do. And Sartre said, to do is to be. But Frank Sinatra said, do be, do be, do.
Do be, do be, do. Yeah. Saw that one coming.
Here. You saw that.
Saw that one coming. I'm broadcasting from New Jersey on a snow day, so sure, Frank Sinatra will be in the air here. Great. Well, and do you have any advice for friends who are feeling anxious here? We have the primary, the Iowa caucuses coming up, and the New Hampshire and the South, and you know, there's a lot of rhetoric out there. And mm-hmm. I see on Facebook friends of mine who are saying, "Oh, we all have to vote for one candidate or another candidate," and having a lot of fear about all the different candidates. Is there anything that readers and watchers of this video can do to sort of calm themselves and keep centered in this coming 9 months or so?
Well, I think to some extent it's to embrace it rather than fight it. One of the advantages of living a fairly long time, as I have, is that I've seen candidates come who are off the wall and off the charts in terms of what seems to be reasonable. And particularly in a presidential election where we look at people with a magnifying glass, eventually the flaws really stand out. And very rarely does someone get elected to such a powerful high office. I don't know if anybody that in my lifetime has gotten elected to such a powerful high office who hasn't had some degree of integrity And when you see people that seem to be conveying great fears and demagoguery and all that, this too shall pass. Even with Richard Nixon, we ran him out of office.
Yeah.
Done. And yet Richard Nixon did some wonderful things in relation to China and started some things that would be considered liberal now.
Sure. And hard to imagine we'd be having this phone call here if it weren't for, you know, the trade with China and, you know, all the electronics and everything. I mean, the modern world that we know right now is, in some parts based on Richard Nixon's foreign policy. So he was thinking ahead there. So,
yeah,
sure. Well, that's about all the time we have. There's much more, everyone, in the issue here, the January issue, Quakers in the Political Process. And you can also go to friendsjournal.org and read it there. And we'll be posting this video up there as well. So thank you for joining us here. I want to read all your books there. You said that was children's books in the background there. They looks like a nice library there. So thanks for taking some time to join us today, Ron.
Thank you, Martin.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye.